Welcome back to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. as we continue, moving into our second hour. Still featuring Tom Scott, and as a matter of fact, from the same album that you were just hearing, album's entitled Blow It Out. The song now is You've Got the Feeling. You know, I've watched people play soccer off and on for years. You know, wasn't a super fan, but I'm impressed by the sport. One of those sports where the athletes are running. They are moving all the time. Up and down that field. I mean, moving. Tremendous skill. And maneuvering with the ball, maneuvering without the ball. Tremendous goalie skills. I mean, that is some impressive sport. But one of the things that I used to wonder about, there were two things that I used to wonder. How often do the athletes accidentally kick each other when two or more people are going for the same ball at the same time? But do you know a question that I asked even more often than that in my own mind? I may have asked some people. Particular people about it, but definitely I asked this question in my own mind. I mean, I've been asking this question off and on for, I don't know, maybe two or three decades, 20 or 30 years, just curious about this. I would watch those guys and gals go up in the air as that ball is flying through the air at whatever rate of speed that ball is flying through the air. And they would position their bodies in such a way as to use their heads to propel that ball in the direction they wanted it to go in, whether they were trying to score or whether they were trying to pass it off to someone else, whatever they were trying to do, using their heads to hit that hard ball. Because, you know, with all that kicking going on, that ball is not easily deflatable, easily depressible. It's got to endure the game. With all those kicks, that ball is firm. And they would take their heads and hit that ball. I couldn't help but wonder, does that do any damage to their heads in general, their brains in particular? And as time went on, I began to conclude that it's got to be doing some kind of damage to their heads, to their brains. Especially if they use their heads frequently to make contact with that ball. And every time, I'll be honest with you, even when I was enjoying watching the game, that was a part of the game that I really did not want to see. Because even though you rarely see anyone go down when they use their heads to hit that ball, they keep right on moving. I still couldn't help but wonder what's going on inside that skull. Well, BBC is sharing some information with us about this heading the football and whether or not it's bad for the people's health. Headed Goals by Harry Kane and Harry Maguire were among those which propelled England to their best World Cup performance since 1990. But here's the question. Can repetitive heading cause damage to the brain and lead to long-term health problems? There's a new study of 300 former professional players that's aiming to answer that question. The plan is to put the ex-players, aged between 50 and 85, through a series of tests that are designed to assess their physical and cognitive capabilities. And so they're not going to try to come up with the answer simply by asking ex-players, hey, do you feel like your brain has suffered at all because of all those hits on the ball that you made with your head. Mm-mm. They're going to take them through a series of tests. And these tests, again, will design their physical capabilities and their cognitive capabilities. What's happening with the brain, with the mind? There will be clinical examinations, and the data is going to be gathered on the player's career in the game and lifestyle factors. That will allow comparisons between defenders and center forwards and other players who tend to head the ball less often. The test results would be compared with those from a general population study known as the 1946 birth cohort, which has monitored the aging process in a group born in that year. The new study is going to be similar to one which the Rugby Football Union embarked on in 2016 to assess the long-term impact of concussions experienced by former players in England. Isn't it interesting that so many of our sports are so harmful to us, cause so much damage? Rugby, football, golf, soccer, and on it goes. These studies are funded by the Drake Foundation, which is a non-profit organization that's focusing on research on concussion injuries in sport. Lead researcher, Professor Neil Pierce, said that they know that there are increased risks of neurological disorders from head injuries in sports like boxing. However, they don't know much about the risks from concussion in football. And they know almost nothing about the long-term effects from heading the ball repeatedly. Again, heading the ball being using your head to hit that soccer ball. This study is going to provide, he says, for the first time, persuasive evidence of the long-term effects on cognitive function from professional football. And remember, very often, you know, here in America, we call soccer, soccer. Game didn't start here, and in most of the world, what we call soccer is called football. So news of the latest study follows increasing debate about the link between repetitive heading and concussion injuries and brain diseases such as dementia and Parkinson's. In February 2017, researchers from University College London and Cardiff University published a study based on post-mortem examinations of the brains of six former players, which found signs of brain injury in four cases. In four out of the six cases, saying they found signs of brain injury. Last year, former England player and BBC pundit Alan Shearer fronted a BBC documentary on the subject. He highlighted the case of Jeff Assel, who played for West Brom in England and developed dementia before dying, get this, at the age of 59 in 2002. A coroner ruled that Mr. Assel's brain had been damaged by years of heading a football. Remember, there are some illnesses that can be very, very traumatic, even though we may not feel them. We may eventually feel the results of those illnesses. For example, high blood pressure. Most people don't actually feel the high blood pressure. But when the body starts breaking down in various ways because of the high blood pressure, they begin to feel some of those symptoms. Alan Shearer concluded that very little has been done to investigate the effects of heading a ball. He finds that staggering. In November 2017, the Football Association and Professional Footballers Association announced that they were funding a study run by the University of Glasgow and Hampden Sports Clinic, looking at physical and mental health outcomes in former players based on analysis of medical records. The team, headed by neuropathologist Dr. Willie Stewart, are going to address this question. Is the incidence of degenerative neurocognitive disease more common in ex-professional footballers, than in the normal population? The new research is understood to be the first of its kind in the UK to involve interviews and tests on former players. What do you think they're going to find? What do you think they'll discover? And if they're able to conclude without doubt, and it sounds like some people have already reached this conclusion, that heading the football repeatedly damages the brain, what rules do you think they might try to incorporate? Do you think that they'll start saying, no more heading? Do you think they'll say, you can only head so many times in so many games? How do you think they'll respond to it? Because that's one of the main issues. Once it's determined that heading the football does cause brain injury, what do you do about it? It's no good to just do the test, do the research, and come up with an answer and then just stop there. What do you do about it? How do we reduce the incidence of brain injury caused by heading the football? All right. We'll be following that up, see what they say. In the meantime, I want us to take a look at something else that causes trauma. And this is from a different angle, but it is one that is all too common around the world and in America. It has to do with shootings. I know that there are a lot of people who love guns. They love the fact that people are able to shoot. And a lot of people have certain kinds of people in mind when they think about the opportunity that they have to shoot, or that someone else can get shot by someone else. And it's amazing that so many people are so in love with the idea of people being able to carry guns anywhere, anytime, that discussions of coming up with better laws and implementing the good laws that are enforcing the good laws that are already in play upset some people, upset a lot of people. We hear about the shooting. Let's hear about the stories, life after the shooting. I want to share with you some conversations from people talking about this whole business of shooting, courtesy of BBC News.
I don't think people understand how expensive it is to get shot. Am I ever gonna be out of debt? Because these medical bills, it's involuntarily. I did not ask to get shot.
Yes, I was a victim of a mass shooting, but I'm a survivor because I'm pushing through it, and I'm not letting what happened to me take over me and consume me in depression and into death. So I'm a survivor.
We are God-fearing people just living, trying to be the best human beings that we can be. And someone with a gun changed all that.
My sister had just turned 22, so we went to celebrate her birthday, and we went to dinner, and then it was after leaving dinner and dropping off one of my sister's passengers that our car was shot up, and they just said it was gang initiation retaliation in the neighborhood. Both of my hips are shattered. Shot up. And they just said it was gang initiation, retaliation in the neighborhood.
And they say that the bullets from an AK-47 went through the bumper, the trunk, and the back seat before hitting this young lady named Megan.
My hips are shattered. One of them has a hole in there from the bullet. The bullet didn't actually exit, so I have in this hip. One of them has a hole in there from the bullet.
Both hips shattered by the bullet.
The bullet didn't actually exit, so I have. And this hip is just like cracked, I guess you can say. I'm not afraid of flashbacks, but before I used to go into deep sleep and then I'd have flashbacks. So it's just like now I try to stay in between. I have like nerve damage, basically. It's called drop foot or foot drop. it does go back to there's only a couple ways out of your neighborhood. And right now it's body bags, you know, and I don't think that that's all we're good for. Like, I know that my people can do better than that.
It said the doctors performed several major initial surgeries to save her life. And now 6 years later, she owes tens of thousands of dollars and is still receiving bills.
Dear Anne-Marie Hobson, the Office of the Attorney General has received your claim for victim compensation benefits. However, additional information is needed.
$1,200.
A receipt for $100.
$1,208.
$1,204.
$1,208.
$1,206. $1,208. Two years after that incident, she became 18. She's no longer enrolled in that program. I wasn't really working as hard as I was before the incident because I was taking care of her. So there was no income coming in at that time.
The insurance has also been a reason why, like, for a long time, I wouldn't go to certain doctors either, like specialists. You just wait until you do have the money to get it, and then you go.
Each year, more than 116,000 people are shot in America. Roughly 28.2 million Americans under age 65 are uninsured.
My story was not on the news. There was never a breaking news.
And isn't it interesting that with all that's going on all the time, we have so many Americans who do not want tens of millions of Americans to have health insurance coverage. And so they're still fighting diligently to dismantle the Affordable Care Act, which was going to cover, make sure that all American citizens had health insurance coverage. This is about the cost of getting shot in America.
That said anything about even, you know, without my name, but just like the shooting itself taking place. I think I've seen the advantages of those who their stories have made it to mainstream media, and just like how people, the outpour of support and resources that you can get on the ground from other people.
I am one of Pulse Nightclub survivors down in Orlando, Florida. I was hospitalized for 2 months. I've had over 30 surgeries.
He was shot in the leg and abdomen and was initially pronounced dead in the hospital.
Every month I have to continue to have go under anesthesia, so they can replace a Foley catheter that they have for me.
Kanan was saved hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills because some said that they wouldn't charge those survivors for that care.
From the One Pulse situation. My living situation probably would be much harder than what it is right now. Everything may seem okay, but you know, I still stress, I still get depressed. I mean, if you're not able to stand or, you know, stand for a long period of time or 8 hours or 8 hour shift, you won't be considered to be hired. It's hard, but I have to push through because no one else can push through for me, should I say. So I try my hard and try my best to keep my head up, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll ever be able to get a house. I don't know if I'll ever be able to have kids because of my incident. But it's just like, then you have, will I ever be able to pay back these? You know, am I ever going to be out of debt?
Unable to work full time because of her injuries, Megan campaigns to stop gun violence.
Personally, I wouldn't say I don't let the financial thing get to me, but like, I think it's gotten to me more because I'll go and do activism stuff and then I'll leave there with the thought of, I gotta get something for myself. Like, I gotta figure out what I can do for myself. You know, I think it's time for me to stop helping other people get to their dreams or get their event or idea out, and their minds are all just stuck in my notebook in my head. Like, I think that's what I think about the most.
Megan looked at my face in the hospital and she said to me, Mom, in the story of my life, I did not see this chapter. I said, not you alone, honey. I could not have written this one at all.